This is Gamerverse, all things gaming, geeky, and good. Ever since I was a young boy, I've played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That damn dumb flying kid sure plays a mean. Welcome to Gamerverse. I'm your host, Erica, and I'm a game designer on the side. I'm lucky enough to say that I have 4 signed games so far, and eventually we'll have them on the shelves to prove it. But in general, games have always interested me. I would consider myself a genuine online and offline gamer. It has also fascinated me the kinds of games that people gravitate toward. If you've been listening to our History of Video Games series, you'll know that games come in all formats and can change incredibly quickly. But what if a game was suddenly dubbed illegal? Not just illegal, but lumped in with gambling because of a perceived level of chance, not even because there's betting involved. This was pinball's unfortunate fate for a while in North America. Okay, so where did all this craziness begin? In 1942, in New York City, pinball was officially banned, and many other American cities followed suit pretty quick. This is a bit of a unique situation, though. So, for example, during Prohibition, drinking moved underground because it was explicitly illegal. But with pinball, the designers just continued to operate because there was a little bit of a loophole in the law. It was illegal to play pinball, but it was still legal to own machines for private use. There was a bit of a cool solidarity scene that kind of sprang out of this, which was really something because rogue arcades and bars placed pinball machines sort of in hidden corners as direct opposition to this ban and probably realizing how silly it was to begin with. Well-known pinball makers such as Gottlieb, Bally's, and Williams were still creating new innovations at this time, such as the double flipper, free balls, and making the game electronic. There was even a further technicality in some states. Again, going back to kind of how ridiculous this all was. In some parts of the US, a free ball was seen as something different than a free game. And this allowed machines with this feature to be put in public places. I'm not really sure what the difference is, because either which way you're playing a free game, but I guess one is one ball and an actual game would be multiple balls? I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with logic for something that makes no sense at this point. Machines intentionally became brighter and flashier in an effort to attract new players, in spite, again, of this ban. It's strange to think that it wasn't until 1976 that anything was even done about this ridiculous ban. It all came down to one guy named Roger Sharp. It's a little strange to think that the fate of pinball came down to one man, so I'll have to tell you a little bit more about him first. He was a young magazine writer from GQ, and sometimes he would write for other well-known publications such as the New York Times. Personally picked to represent the Music and Amusement Association, as well as pretty much every fan of pinball, really. But he wasn't picked for no reason. He was picked specifically for his knowledge on pinball and the fact that he was really good at playing. He was said to have legendary hand-eye coordination. So how was he going to fight this ban? By proving that pinball was not a game of luck, but one of pure skill. Okay, so this is how this court case went down. 2 pinball machines were provided to the courtroom. It's a really funny image to think about playing pinball in court to prove a case. But anyway, so Sharp first tried to set out an argument, trying to prove pinball was skill, not chance, through his words. They basically said, prove it. So Sharp started to play a game. He must have been playing way too well, because one of the councilmen accused the pinballers of machine tampering. So Sharp started a game on the backup machine. Now, Sharp was an extremely good player on the first machine, because he actually was very familiar with it, besides the fact that he was a good pinball player. So here is where things take a bit of a twist. He really didn't have any experience on this second machine. He'd never played the second game. He still played extremely well in spite of this fact, but the council was still not impressed. So, Sharp pulled a Babe Ruth and he called his shots. Before each release of the plunger or hit of the flipper, he would call out where his ball was intended to go to prove once and for all that the game was skill and not chance. This actually, in fact, won them the case because there really was no argument left. Somebody who could actively call where a ball was going to go, imagine what Vegas would be like if people could pull that type of accuracy. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gamerverse podcast, all about why pinball was once illegal. You can follow us on Twitter at GamerverseCast, or you can follow me personally, Erica, at Frenemy Games, and get an insider's glimpse into my tabletop game designing adventures. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or YouTube, and show us a little love with a review if you wouldn't mind, to help other fantastic geeks like yourself find us. If you're interested in helping out the podcast, please support our Patreon at patreon.com/gamerversepodcast. We also have an email address if you want to send us any thoughts, inspirations, or episode ideas, and that is thegamerversepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, gamers, this is Gamerverse, all things gaming, geeky, and good.